honey, I miss that deep dish taste. Sitting on the roof at Wrigley Field, cold wind coming off the lake.
Meet me in Chicago.
South Wabash Avenue.
Meet me in Chicago.
All right, Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. So many of Chicago's lesser-known architectural gems are often left to deteriorate over the years, many of which ultimately face demolition or redevelopment that strip buildings of their architectural pedigree. And to highlight some of these endangered historic structures, the organization Preservation Chicago, they release a list every year of the buildings that deems to be most endangered. Ward Miller is the executive director of Preservation Chicago, and he joins us on the Team Hochberg phone line. Welcome back to the show, Ward. How you doing, buddy?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate sharing the airways with you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. All right. So let me, you know, tell folks a little bit about what Preservation Chicago is all about.
So we're an advocacy organization. We advocate to landmark and preserve Chicago's great architecture and its built environment. And we work with communities to grow those communities holistically through historic preservation and the built environment. We think this could be a much better city if we reused and honored our architectural legacy here.
Absolutely. Now, you guys put out this list every year of the seven most endangered. It's actually more than seven because we're talking about some categories of buildings this year. But, you know, raising this awareness is important. What is the process like within your organization to come up with these specific buildings?
Well, you know, we do a lot of outreach starting late summer, early fall to the general public, asking for suggestions. And we also have a board that's very diverse from across the city and different neighborhoods, and they bring suggestions to the table. And then we're also following all the time news stories and media stories. If we see buildings that are looking a little in disrepair or feel that they're vacant, and if those would perhaps maybe make a great Chicago 7 candidate, we include those too. So, you know, we get upwards of, you know, sometimes 170 candidates or suggestions, I should say, and that's all whittled down to 7, and that's handled with our board and staff at Preservation Chicago. We tell we give it like a history and a background of each building, along with photographs, and talk about some, come to some very difficult decisions, if you will, from a great selection of candidates that is shared with us.
And it's not that you're not going to advocate for some of these other buildings, because you absolutely will, but this list has become very iconic in the city for many, many years to really keep an eye on, right?
Right. It's a chance to spotlight, you know, certain buildings that have an interesting history, have an interesting story. You know, one of them is the Phyllis Wheatley House this year, and, you know, an amazing story that a lot of people may not have known about. But this is an opportunity to really highlight, spotlight those buildings and share our stories and our research and our findings with the general public and encourage preservation outreach and good preservation solutions. And that's oftentimes what happens. Not all the time, but oftentimes.
Now, there's two sweeping almost categories that we have to talk about here. The first one, which I found interesting when I found these two, and one of them I have my own story to share with you, but the Chicago Lakefront. And I worked for Montgomery Ward for years, so and kind of helped with their archives and stuff. And I knew how important keeping that, you know, that lake and that land forever open, clear, and free, which was, of course, that vision for Chicago. But there's some threats going on right now that we really have to pay attention to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, from rethinking Lakeshore Drive, where they're talking about trenching Lakeshore Drive between Navy Pier and Oak Street Beach into a tunnel, sort of making it a highway, adding extra land, taking out some of the bridges and the turns and the vistas. You know, we have to think of Lakeshore Drive as a boulevard and not as a highway. And, you know, part of the beauty of going down Lakeshore Drive is seeing the city, seeing these curves, seeing these vistas, seeing the lake. And, you know, we're not opposed to some changes, but every time we've touched Lakeshore Drive, whether it be around McCormick Place where it looks like a, you know, a 16-lane highway to, you know, the S-curve, it just, loses its beautiful boulevard tree-lined character. Then we're also seeing, you know, the Obama Presidential Center coming to 20 acres of Jackson Park on the lakefront, and they want to close. Not only do they want to add this, you know, 23-story building, basically 230 feet tall, and these ancillary buildings on 20 acres and, you know, take down a lot of trees, but they also want to close Cornell Drive and parts of Hayes Drive and widen Lakeshore Drive there and widen Stony Island Avenue. And, you know, it just takes, it's death by a thousand cuts. We need to be careful of our lakefront. So, and then the brownfields of the former steel mills of the Southworks, we'd love to see greened and be part of this, you know, beautiful lakefront. So we're noticing buildings that are falling into disrepair. Some buildings are collapsing in our parks. They're cash starved. And so therefore, we're asking that the city consider being making the lakefront a national park, a U.S. national park, help with the lift of maintenance and care and security, and then allow the city to take some of those monies that would normally be dedicated to the lakefront, now that would be a shared idea, and invest in new parks throughout the inner city and programs for children and adults. And this is a way to maybe make that happen and also increase tourism and all sorts of visitors that would come and support our hospitality and, you know, hotel and restaurant industry as well. So this is an interesting idea. And then converting the Lakeside Center at McCormick Place into perhaps the world's largest field house and cultural center, reactivating Eric Crown Theater, and making this a first-class field house on the lakefront in the Mid-South Brownsville neighborhood. We think that could be amazing.
It could be very cool. And is this the first time this has ever been discussed to convert some of this to a national park so that we can get that funding? Is this the first time this discussion is happening ever?
You know, we mentioned it last year, in 2019, when we had Jackson Park, the Midway, and the South Shore Cultural Center on our endangered list, but it didn't become the focus of that. And this year, it really is the focus because we're seeing so many deteriorated trails and components. We're also seeing erosion happening, and, you know, the effects of global warming. And the impact on the lakefront, and especially those buildings that don't have this green space in front of them. If you will, the green space is wonderful, but it also protects the built environment and our buildings from the effects of Lake Michigan on those, you know, very unpredictable days when the when the lake is rough.
Very important part of our city. You mentioned earlier the Phyllis Wheatley home. This was a house, and it was a program to safeguard Black women and girls who traveled to Chicago during the Great Migration. It's a house that probably people haven't heard of, thought of before. Share a little bit about this backstory.
A wonderful building, as you said. You know, Black women coming to Chicago during the Great Migration, this is, you know, began just before World War One and continued through most of, you know, the 20th century into the you know, into the 30s and 40s, really World War II probably slowed this down. But this was a home for African-American women coming up from the South, looking for better opportunities in Chicago, a better life, and couldn't or weren't allowed to stay at the YWCA, weren't allowed to stay at the Eleanor Clubs or some of these other housing facilities. And if you didn't have a relative or a friend that was in Chicago, oftentimes you were sort of left homeless, if you will. So this group of African-American women, beginning in the 1890s, started this idea called the Phyllis Wheatley Homes. They formed the Phyllis Wheatley Club. And Phyllis Wheatley was a poet and America's first Black poet that was published, the second woman that was published in America. And so, and she lived during the sort of Revolutionary War times, if you will. She was kidnapped in Africa, became a Black, was a Black slave to a family that was very sympathetic and educated her, taught her Greek and Latin. And, you know, here's this remarkable woman who died at 30 in another time and age, and these women picked up Phyllis Wheatley's name in that mantle and that history, and named these clubs and these houses in her honor. And there were three of them, and this is the last of the three, if you will. And it's a house that's in really dire straits, but it's a beautifully crafted house that just needs a cash infusion and that history honored and designated a landmark.
Not even history in Chicago, but history nationally, really.
Exactly. And there were Phyllis Wheatley homes and clubs around the United States and schools named after her as well. So, you know, this would be an honor in so many ways, and so much of women's history has been lost. And when you get down to Black women's history, there are even greater losses. So this is really the rarest of the rare to survive, and it's so important to save it and honor this legacy.
Absolutely, and there's so much more to talk about. We're talking to Ward Miller from Preservation Chicago about this year's 7 most endangered buildings, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Ward Miller from Preservation Chicago. You can find out more information on preservationchicago.org. We're talking about this year's 7 most endangered buildings. All right, let's talk a little bit about it. This is a sweeping one here. You're talking about the Catholic churches in Chicago, and given there's a huge Renew My Church campaign, and churches and parishes are consolidating, and I've been little bits and pieces, parts of that going into some of these churches as they're being sold and pulling out, you know, statues and things that can be repurposed in other Catholic churches. I mean, the tragedy is really the buildings. What happens to them if they're not sold?
Well, you know, canon law suggests that if there is an organization that's Catholic themed or tied to the Catholic Church or theology, that they should get the first, if you will, option to acquire these buildings. And we're seeing a violation of canon law here that's happening in Chicago and sometimes elsewhere. And we're not a party to the lawsuit, but or the legal matters, but we do know, and oftentimes write letters of support to the organization that is challenging these closures in the Vatican. These legal documents start in English, and they're sent to Italy, where they're translated into Italian, and then they go into the Vatican, where they're translated into ecclesiastical Latin, and then debated in that in Latin before the Vatican courts. And there are 19 of them, soon to be a few more, that are challenging these closures that sometimes we feel are not fair. You know, these churches are more than just a physical building in the neighborhood and a cornerstone and a gateway to these neighborhoods. But, you know, they also provide, in addition to the faith space, they also provide, you know, a lot of social services, food pantries and whatnot.
Community
and when
centers.
These buildings close, we're in trouble. Usually they're the last ones out of the neighborhood, but a lot of times these buildings close when they have an incredible amount of people, sometimes above 800 parishioners. Our Lady of Lourdes has 975, and it's basically on probation. That's really sad.
Yeah. And I know, you know, we all know, I mean, it's a lot of land. It's a business also. And, you know, just like as we talk about, and it's different, as you talked about, it's got some religious value. It's community centers and so forth. It's still an operating business. And if they can't sustain themselves, what do you do? It's like talking about a little bit like the post office right now. Like, if you can't sustain yourself, what changes have to be made? There might have to be some shifts in the thinking and how we do things with these buildings. But I also know there's some buildings out there that literally are locked up, closed up, and nothing's being done with them. Beautiful stained glass, the interiors, the marble, everything. What is the right thing to do with these buildings then?
Well, you know, if it doesn't work as a faith center, and it doesn't work as a chapel or a you know, place of contemplation, which it could be as well, because, you know, you don't want these to be in direct competition with the archdiocese as a parish, but, you know, they work very well for other community uses, for concerts, for lectures and presentations as community centers. You know, ideally, they're really multi-purpose auditoriums, but, you know, they're sacred spaces. And you certainly, if you're getting married in the Catholic Church, you certainly can't get married out in the woods or on a mountaintop. They insist that you be married in a sacred space, and we feel that those sacred spaces should remain. And they were built by the faithful and the communities around them with pennies, nickels, and dimes, and given to the archdiocese, in this case, a corporation to staff, steward, and maintain. And sometimes that promise hasn't been kept. And we've seen over 100 churches close in the past century, and there are 88 that are being consolidated, closed, or listed for sale. About 25 of them actually listed for sale. But, this is a trajectory that's, not good. So we have to find some other creative solutions. And we're trying to outreach with them, but they will not even consent to Chicago landmark designation of these buildings that were, built by the faithful and the people of Chicago. Oftentimes our ancestors, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers, and aunts and uncles, and given to them to steward. So we think it's really unfair that oftentimes these are marketed for top dollar. And when they sold the parking lot across from Holy Name Cathedral for $130 million plus, none of that, to our knowledge, went into these parish churches to fix leaky roofs or to secure buildings. We just think that it's not very fair, and there are better alternatives. These buildings belong to all of us collectively, even if one organization owns the deed. So we just want to encourage more outreach, more conversation, and more creative ideas to preserve these buildings.
Fair enough. The Cornell store in Flats, some say one of the most significant buildings in Chicago on 75th Street, East 75th Street.
Right. This is a little two-story building. Some wonderful architectural historians in Chicago really love this building. And it's hard to see because it's on 75th Street. It's near a railroad embankment, the Metro Electric, formerly the IC, the Illinois Central Railroad. And it's right at a viaduct, this railroad embankment, and it's got a junkyard behind it. But it's a fabulous building by Walter Burley Griffin, who worked for Frank Lloyd Wright and married an associate within the Frank Lloyd Wright's Oak Park studio, Marion Mahoney Griffin, who was Frank Lloyd Wright's delineator as well as a very accomplished architect, a woman. In those days, as an accomplished architect, was something else, and a great source of pride. He went on to not only design fabulous houses and buildings in Chicago, but he also won a competition, an international competition, to design the capital city of Australia, Canberra, and then went on to design buildings in India, where he died. But Walter Burley Griffin is considered of that Frank Lloyd Wright Prairie School, and a remarkable architect. And here's a building with two principal facades. One faces 75th Street as a commercial front. The other, the north elevation, addresses these courtyard apartments upstairs. And it's really a fabulous little building, and it could be worked into a larger complex of buildings as there's vacant parcels to the east and to the west of it. And it could even be integrated as a transportation center tied to the Metro Electric and the bus lines nearby. So there's a lot of opportunities for this little building that sits vacant and abandoned. And it's really a tragedy that we let these buildings go.
The South Chicago Masonic Temple, we got about five more minutes here. This one, designed in 1916, just beautiful. Tell us the story real quick on this one.
A great Masonic temple designed by Clarence Hatsfield in 1916. It's at 91st and Exchange in South Chicago. And a beautiful little building that, again, is vacant, boarded up. And, in a city that needs housing and resources, why are we letting these buildings go? So I want to encourage the city and individuals and developers to look at this building as a possible redevelopment site.
The West Loop Industrial Buildings, we're talking about a ton of buildings here that need some attention. Give us a little time on this one.
Right. So we got the ADM mill. This is on Carroll Street near Ogden Avenue. A lot of people recognize the grain silos, mm-hmm. if you will, that fronted Ogden.
Absolutely.
But a Right, but a great building by Flanders and Zimmerman, Chicago's oldest existing flour mill, tied to, the food production and the old South Water Market and the old Fulton Randolph Market, which is now a landmark district to the east. Really, remarkable complex owned by Sterling Bay. We were hoping that they would engage part of these facades into the new development. And that doesn't appear to be happening because there's a demolition occurring on the site now. But we're always hopeful. And then the Tyler and Hippick Glass Company, which is now known as the Tyre Cassidy Building, or Cassidy Tyre Building, out on Wolf Point, just near the Merchandise Mart, where Chicago started as a little town and village. This is by Henry Schlacks, who designed so many of these Roman Catholic church buildings. He was just known for his ecclesiastical buildings, a favorite architect of Cardinal Mundelein. And here's a commercial building that was actually moved once before, a couple hundred feet from its original site in its early days, and now stands in the way of a giant apartment building that's planned for the site. And really tragic that we're losing these kinds of structures, especially when you consider it's surrounded by tall buildings now, a lot different than it was 30 years ago, even. And then the Salvation Army building on Union Street near Grand Avenue from 1891 with a 1947 Art Deco Art Modern remodeling. A fabulous building by Furst and Rudolph. And, it's for sale, and it'd be great to find a developer or a community organization to encourage its reuse or purchase it, shall we say, and find a good solution, a preservation solution for this building.
We only got 30 seconds left, but the Central Manufacturing District and the original East District.
Yes, this was Chicago's original and the world's first industrial district where all utilities and support services were all combined into a group of really fabulously designed buildings. This is different than the CMD or the Central Manufacturing District along Pershing Road, which was a Chicago 7 last year. But we're seeing these wonderful little buildings with all these great details demolished. And, this is really included the Wrigley Factory, the Walgreens Company, the Larkin Soap Company. And one by one, these are being demolished. It's like death by a thousand cuts. So let's save these buildings. Let's landmark them. Let's encourage reuse of these structures.
And for more information and how to support the organization financially, too, visit preservationchicago.org. Ward, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you so much for hosting us, Dave. Always a pleasure to outreach to you and your audience.
Thank you, Ward. Appreciate it. All right, thanks again. Ashley Banfield will join us to talk about our new series right after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.